The following is a rebroadcast of two interviews that we did here on Issues Etc. with Michael Spencer, perhaps better known as Internet Monk. He's a good friend of Issues Etc., a great theologian. We got the sad news that Michael died earlier this week after a serious illness. What I admired about Michael Spencer was his consistent and brave call to the church back to biblical orthodoxy from all of the foolishness of pop American evangelicalism. He did take the slings and arrows of his evangelical Christian friends, but he did it with good humor, and he never compromised the message of Christ and Him crucified. And we here at Issues Etc. not only wanted to remember him with this rebroadcast, but also to remind our listeners to keep his family and his friends in their prayers as they remember him as well. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday afternoon, the 10th of March. From one weighty subject, the collapse of the American judicial system, even as it grows stronger in and of itself, to the collapse of American evangelicalism, there's an article written by our guest in the Christian Science Monitor titled "The Coming Evangelical Collapse." We'll be talking about it for about the next 20 minutes of the program. Then Dr. Gilbert Mailander will join us for hour two to kick off that hour. We'll be talking about President Obama's announcement yesterday to allow federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. Our call-in number for the next hour and a half, 1-877-623-6943. And our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Michael Spencer is a writer and communicator in Kentucky, author of the blog InternetMonk.com, been reading it a long time, and he's written an article, "The Coming Evangelical Collapse in the Christian Science Monitor." Michael, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Michael, don't you read the papers? I mean, we just had a survey come out yesterday that said that the people who call themselves non-denominational Christians went from 0.1% in 1990 to 0.35% of the population now. And this is where many people believe the future of evangelicalism actually resides. And you say evangelicalism has an imminent collapse facing it. How can you say that?
Well, first of all, let's make sure we're clear on what I'm saying. All day long, people have been telling me I'm predicting the total demise of evangelicalism, and I'm not. I am saying that within 10 to 25, we're going to see a rapid decrease, and I expect that my grandchildren will be looking at about half of the evangelicalism there is today. The phenomena you're talking about is basically, I think, the result of mega church dominance in the evangelical world, and the number of mega churches has grown astronomically, and what you have is a lot of people who have moved from no church affiliation to attending, and we got to be careful what we say about most megas because most of them don't have a membership model, to attending or identifying with a mega church. So their numbers and the numbers of people who say, okay, well, I was not going to church as after college or after my divorce or whatever, now I'm going to such and such megachurch, those numbers are way up because the megachurch is sort of in full bloom now. But megachurches are a house of cards, and I think there will be many of them that will be the first big signs of this collapse. There'll be many left, but megachurches really are, I think, the primary example of at least many of them are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, why it's so insubstantial, why it's so unsatisfying. So those numbers are up, but you can also go to areas where there are dominant megachurches and say, how many people are in church now as opposed to 20 years back? And even though you have megachurches, you have fewer people in church as a percentage of the population or even total. So I think there's a bit of an illusion there.
Yeah, I think that's true, actually. For America, after 30-some-odd years of church growth, a guest on the program did some research, actually wrote a book called Stealing Sheep, where he says the church itself, as a percentage of the population or as a raw number, has not grown under the church growth movement. We've just moved people from smaller churches to bigger churches. You say that evangelicals have made a big mistake in identifying themselves, in identifying their movement with a culture war and with political conservatism. Why was that a mistake?
Well, I think that over-identification, the church as a movement over-identifying with the culture war has been a tremendous drain on evangelicalism's needed focus on the gospel. Anyone who is familiar with evangelicals in the last 10 to 15 years knows that an evangelical these days is far more likely to identify himself by his stance on social and political issues rather than by anything approaching the Apostles' Creed or confessional Christianity. And that's a real concern. And no matter what that does on the political level, it has drained evangelicalism of its vital doctrinal core. And I'm 52. I've worked with students since I was 18. And I can easily see this. My students have far deeper feelings about culture war issues than they have about theological issues. On theological issues, it's moral therapeutic deism. On cultural issues, they are standing by those culture war issues. Many of them are. Now, we are seeing a lot of shifting of young adult evangelicals looking at this investment in the culture war and questioning it. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. I think really the whole political heyday of evangelicalism is, if not gone, it's certainly going to eclipse for the next few years.
So if you talk to young people, you'll find them, they know what they believe and why they believe it on social moral issues and political issues. Those are non-negotiables for them. But as far as their theology, is it negotiable?
They know that in the Bible somewhere are the reasons that they are pro-life and anti-gay marriage, but they don't have the Christian worldview framework. Very, very few do. And this is because evangelicalism has done a much better job of passing on its culture war concerns than, again, its doctrinal core. And this is why so many people, thousands of them at my blog over the 8 years I've been blogging, have come to the conclusion that evangelicalism is simply insubstantial, and they go looking for something that has both the core values and the core theology, and many of them wind up heading towards Rome or orthodoxy.
You say that evangelicalism has failed to pass on the faith once for all delivered to the saints. Why has it failed to do that? That seems to kind of be, what, job number one, if you want to even if it's, you just view it as a movement to survive.
Well, of course, you could call Michael Horton and get a far better answer than from me on that. Michael's been writing about that for a long time. Even in someone outside the evangelical community, like Christine Wicker in her book Fall of the Evangelical Nation, says this has been our great failure. I think there are several reasons. Certainly one of the most prevailing is the interest in church growth being the primary value, and then this buys into pragmatism and innovation at all costs, and we wind up making people who are only marginally connected to our faith and are never discipled, and then the church continues to move its entire agenda towards growth, so there is less and less going on to disciple the people who actually are there. And if you do that over a period of 15, 20 years, you are taking out a huge chunk of the heart of your movement's future. And that, I think, is what we are watching.
What do you make of leaders of confessional Reformation church bodies like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, who are doing their best to ape pop American Christianity?
Well, I'm no expert on the LCMS. I know a little more about the Reformed world, the Baptist world. I think that this was the crossroads moment for confessional churches of all types. And I mean, I think anyone who sits where I sit in evangelicalism and asks what is needed right now for millions of evangelicals, and it is a strong, missional, outreaching, confessional church tradition, not one that's hiding or trying to copy someone else, but is staying true to its core, true to its confession, but is reaching out towards evangelicals and towards those same people that are going into the megachurches because their doors are so wide open. If we could find a way to continue being who we are as confessional Christians, but to be as welcoming and as outreaching as those who have decided to jettison that doctrinal core, I think we could see something happen. It's a very sad moment, really. It's a very sad moment to see this crossroads come, and there's just no place for so many to go.
We talk about issues, et cetera, as Radio for Recovering Evangelicals, and we hear from them all the time.
Right.
How does the church reach out to the refugees and the recovering evangelicals?
Well, I think it is a long-term commitment. I think you guys know that. You have to come to terms with the channels of communication and presentation that are out there. I think you have to have some flagship churches that know how to use media. I was listening to Mark Driscoll at Mars Hill the other day say that he realized that his church's success in reaching so many unchurched in Seattle was congruent with the rise of the Internet and the use of the Internet in ministry. I think we have to invest ourselves over time in those things that do present who we are, but then we have to deal with those issues about do we really want to let go of some of our security and risk what has to be risked in order to bring new people in, assimilate them, disciple them. And so many traditional churches with strong confessional backgrounds aren't willing to do that. They don't want that risk. And, of course, evangelicals are willing to negotiate anything. They'll turn a baptism into a backyard barbecue on a moment's notice if it'll get someone there. So that's their strong point. So it's never any surprise to me that these folks who are more than ready to deconstruct and re-innovate everything pull in so many people, because you have other traditions that just simply won't even look at the most basic issues of communication, presentation, or even ask the question, how are we perceived by others?
Well, let's take a break, and when we come back, pick up right there with Michael Spencer. He's written an article for the Christian Science Monitor, The Coming Evangelical Collapse.
My friend, I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Robert Peterson, Sandra Franz, Gene Schrader, Laura Solomon, Doris Underhill, Joshua Claiborne, Jacqueline Schrader, Joel Bozant, Susan Tice, and David Hobson. Thanks for your support.
Here are a few of the features of the new Lutheran Study Bible from Concordia Publishing House. Study notes, application notes, and prayers from a uniquely Lutheran perspective. 120 maps, charts, and diagrams. You'll find law and gospel application notes, center column references, and quotes from the Church Fathers. Check out the Lutheran Study Bible at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or pre-order the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Talk radio for recovering evangelicals. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with cup holder for your double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues, Etc.
This is the end.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Tuesday afternoon, March the 10th, Michael Spencer is our guest, writer and communicator in Kentucky, author of the blog InternetMonk.com, and he's written an article for the Christian Science Monitor titled The Coming Evangelical Collapse. We'll post a link to this article at our website, issuesetc.org. Just click On Demand, and you'll find that link. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number, 877-623-MY-IE, or email us, talkback@issuesetc.org. In connection with something you were saying before the break, you say that denominationalism is also probably facing something of a similar kind of collapse along with evangelicalism. Explain that.
Well, I think that not necessarily the doctrinal distinctiveness of our traditions, though I think that maintaining that in the current atmosphere, which is very, very, very generic, I think that is a tough job. But I think that from the standpoint of people asking questions of, you know, why are we supporting huge numbers of denominational employees and facilities, and what is this all about? I think it's an age of networking with like-minded people, but maintaining that denominational structure that so many of us grew up with. I grew up with as a Southern Baptist, and that certainly others did. And I work at one level of that. I think that there's some real concerns there that is part of the collapse that really is going to fall, and fall hard.
The final reason you give, and then I want to give you a chance to explain what you think it's going to look like post-evangelicalism or kind of in the next stage of this thing. You say the final reason is the money is simply going to dry up.
Well, this is part of what I call the generational horizon problem, which is that evangelicalism has has lived off this greatest generation, the people who tithe without questioning. The older generation who gives loyally to their causes. And when that generational horizon hits and we are faced with baby boomers, and you can only imagine what they're thinking right now as we go through this financial crunch, and a much more skeptical, pragmatic Generation Y and so on, who are only going to support what they see really involves them and gives them some benefit. I think the money is going to drive. I think there's been enormous coasting on the generosity of the greatest generation, and a lot of denominational ministries, a lot of ministries in general, that are not doing the hard work to sell themselves as good stewardship to younger givers are going to crash.
What can we expect evangelicalism to look like, 25 years from now?
Well, the Christian Science Monitor article was a distillation of three longer articles that are at InternetMonk.com right now. And the three longer articles, I have a lot of detail on that, especially in the third one. And I'm certainly no prophet, but here are some of the things I think we are going to see. What will remain in evangelicalism will continue to be dominated by megachurches for, I think, another chapter. Because there's a great diversity among megachurches in terms of what they are doing, how devoted they are to the gospel, how much church planting they are doing, how much compromise with the culture. There's big differences, and that's going to somewhat sort out. I think we're going to see Pentecostal Christianity have an ascendancy because they have a lot of energy. They have a lot of cross-cultural savvy. They have a lot of the kind of spirituality that appeals to America right now. They are tied into the world Christian movement, and we are a nation of increasing immigrants. They have big problems, doctrinally, biblical authority, prosperity gospel. That's probably going to get them in their next chapter. But 25 years from now, I think they will be the majority report in a very diverse evangelicalism. And then I think the confessional churches, the ones that have worked hard for reformation and theological renewal, I think they're going to be doing well. They're not going to be doing what they would hope and pray for. I think they're going to continue to be small, but I think they're going to be vital, And my word to them is start new churches. My prayer is that the evangelicalism of the future is full of new congregations. I don't want to make anybody angry because I love older people, and I almost am one. But our future is in new churches, and we have spent a lot of time trying to revitalize what didn't want to be revitalized. And I think church planters and church planning is much more what we need to be thinking about for our future.
Okay, so it sounds like it's going to be kind of big castle on the hill with little villages below. You're going to have Joel Osteen hitting 70,000
right.
a week. As he grows gray, so will his audience, and that'll be A-okay as long as his message remains as vacuous as ever. As long as he steers clear of his word faith roots, he gets bigger. And then the other vital center, I don't know if that would be called a vital center there, because there's so little gospel, but the vital center of the church sounds like it's going to be congregations that may be less than 25 years old, but in fact, a theology that is as ancient as the scriptures themselves.
I think that this is an era of church planting. If we knew, as Chuck Colson said, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, we were facing a new dark age, what would we do? Well, I mean, there are some things you do in terms of retreating. But the thing that we as Reformation Christians need to do is to admit our weakness as church planters and to address that and to send people into our culture to plant our future churches, making the changes we know need to be made based on the experience we are having now. I'm a very optimistic person about the future of Christianity. But evangelicalism as a post-Billy Graham phenomena, I think we are going to see that collapse happen. But what I hope is going to be birthed out of that will be something very diverse with lots of new churches. One thing I want to add into that picture is I think a lot of evangelicals are going to go to Rome and go to the Eastern Orthodox route. My phone and my email has rung up all day with Catholics saying, Mr. Spencer, would you become a Catholic? And this has been going on as long as I've been doing Internet Muck. Rarely has a Lutheran ever said that to me. Rarely has a Presbyterian ever said that to me. But Catholics are relentless wanting evangelicals to move over. And the reason for that is so many have, and that they are saying this is a directly address the problems we had with evangelicalism. And that, I think, is going to be a fact of the future.
With only about a minute here, Pope Benedict, one of the first things he said after being elevated was that the Roman Catholic Church will probably need to decrease in size and increase in its faithfulness. I think he was absolutely right. If so, how come we don't see any church leaders in the Protestant Church making statements like this?
Well, because church growth is the idol we have set up and said you can do no wrong if you're worshiping that idol. And I put up a piece on InternetMuck.com a few days ago about an evangelistic meeting a fellow was at, and the evangelist had people texting in their decisions for Christ. That sort of innovative use of technology is all about numbers at all cost. That's our problem.
Michael Spencer is a writer and communicator in Kentucky, author of the blog InternetMonk.com. I suggest you read it. He's also written an article for the Christian Science Monitor titled The Coming Evangelical Collapse. You can check out the article under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Michael, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you very much, Todd.
You know, I think when Pope Benedict uttered those words, I thought to myself, now there is brave church leadership. A man who is willing to tell his church, and he speaks for 1.5 billion Christians in the world, and he speaks to them too. Benedict says, well, in the 21st century, the Roman church will likely get smaller if it is to remain faithful. Which are we called to do, get bigger or remain faithful? If you read the words of Christ, the one who began this enterprise called the church and sustains this enterprise called the church, he calls always and only for faithfulness. He says it is of primary importance for stewards that they be found faithful. He says nothing about success. He says nothing about expediency. He says nothing about being effective or efficient. He says nothing about getting bigger. He says faithfulness. What are the words that will greet each and every Christian, pastor, lay person, lifelong Christian, deathbed convert, on their entrance into eternal life? Good and faithful servant. Now, sometimes in the history of the church, faithfulness, job one in the church, has meant numerical growth. And over time, I think you could say that it always has meant numerical growth on the long term, kind of like the stock market. But at times, faithfulness to Christ and His Word has meant that the church gets smaller or stays the same. What does Christ call for? Trust me, believe me, proclaim my death, my resurrection, my blood shed for sinners, remain faithful unto death. That's what He calls for. That's His call to the church now and in the future. When we come back, hour two of Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're going to continue our conversation on megachurches and the people who attend them. We had Scott Thuma on before the break, now one of the foremost experts on the megachurch. Author of the blog InternetMonk.com, Michael Spencer, joins us to do a little analysis. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Excited to be back.
Megachurches have been doing their thing for about 30 years now in America. What can confessional Reformation churches learn from the megachurch?
You know, if you look around an area that is not overrun with megachurches, but that has maybe one, two, or three, you will see that generally that is the hardest working, most risk-taking, most intentional, best planned, best resourced church in the area, and they deserve to grow other factors aside because they work hard at growing. They don't talk about it. They work hard at it. They make some tough decisions, sometimes those that are painful towards relationships, maybe sometimes those that alienate certain people. They know what they are there to do, and they work hard at doing it. And I think anybody can go in and ask the ministry team at a megachurch, what are the things that you've done that have made you successful, and learn lots of very practical, helpful things.
And yet you have called the megachurch, especially the American megachurch, a house of cards. What do you mean?
Well, I think that you've got a shallow evangelicalism, and you have a form of church that basically caters to shallow evangelicalism. The fact that evangelicals will come out of the evangelical wilderness and attend a megachurch is really no more surprising than that Americans will go to the mall or to the movie theater, where the plan has basically met them where they are culturally, with large numbers, with quality of technology, those sorts of things, programs for their children. If you're single, large numbers of single people. I mean, these are obviously things that are going to pull evangelicals in, but it's not going to pull evangelicals in America today on the level of loyalty to the gospel of Jesus Christ. You were asking exactly the right questions when you were going down that road. If we're talking about a service to the audience-oriented experience, of course evangelicals will pass through that. And the Willow Creek study was only mentioned once The Willow Creek study tells us the other end of this. Now, they've certainly not fallen to pieces, but two-thirds of the congregation said they could see themselves leaving within a year. I think a lot of megachurches will experience that. They have their own set of problems. Changes of pastor. I mean, what megachurch does anybody know that's on their third or fourth pastor? It takes an enormous amount of financial resources to do what they do. They're very vulnerable. And as Dr. Thuma said, they're also they are greatly benefited by where they locate. And so many mega churches are do well because they're in a great location, and others are in a much more vulnerable kind of location as things change. They have a very transitory group of people who pass through. I just think where culture goes in this country in the next 25 years, some mega churches will continue to do well. Many will not. I don't think it's the church that's going to save evangelicalism, if such a thing were possible.
They've marketed themselves well, I hear you saying. But when it comes to doing what the church has been sent by Christ to do, commissioned by Christ to do, and instituted and left here by Christ to do, what kind of grade would you give them there? Not the marketing grade, but the faithfulness grade.
Oh, they would tell you, if you talk to those who are honest, that, you know, obviously you can be overrun with kids in upwards basketball and upwards soccer, and overrun with people who want to come to a weekly rock concert-type worship service, overrun with folks who want to come to a big singles ministry. But when you cross that line into weekly attendance at a small group, into leadership in the church, into long-term discipleship, long-term churchmanship, you get things take a major dive. Every megachurch knows this. The most hardworking member of the staff will be the person trying to turn all those customers into disciples. And I don't think it's radical, really, to say that the megachurch is successful at attraction. It's successful at certain levels of getting people to come back to church, maybe after divorce or estrangement from the church. But as a disciple-producing kind of church, I don't think it has anything much on the small church where relationships and discipleship are done in a different way.
How much of these megachurches are built around, I guess for lack of a better term, a cult of personality attached to the pastor, or in some cases, to a charismatic music or worship leader?
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word cult. I would say that megachurches largely depend on an entrepreneurial pastor who is extremely appealing. If you don't have both those things, I don't think it's going to work. And then, secondly, a very charismatic worship leader. This is what I'm talking about with vulnerability. You can empty out a large church in the United States today rather quickly with a pastoral change, or with a music program change, you can vaporize an entire congregation right down to the next megachurch. And megachurches feel that vulnerability. They understand they're in competition for that. This is a way of doing worship in stark contrast to Lutheranism, where the minister has broad appeal to dominate the service with his personality, jokes, family life, pictures of the kids and the dog. That's what people want, as opposed to somebody who comes in and hides behind the word and behind the actual church's doctrinal traditions. I mean, we all want ministers to be warm, caring human beings. We want them to be likable. But megachurches have a tremendous vulnerability in that area, and it's not a pretty picture seeing people try to climb that mountain.
We were one Sunday in Houston, Texas, attending Lakewood, the largest megachurch in the United States, with Joel Osteen, its pastor. And Joel and Victoria were out of the country, I believe, on that particular Sunday. And the music leader, extremely charismatic, talented young man, led the service and gave the sermon. And we walked away, both Jeff and I walked away, saying, if he wanted this congregation, he could have it. Or if he wanted to walk away the next week and say, follow me, I'm going to start a new church, he could take half the congregation with him.
Which, of course, frequently happens. This is another aspect of megachurch life. So, I mean, I am very grateful for those that are doing a very solid job, and there are many who are doing, particularly in the work of evangelism and reclaiming folks, a very solid job. But once you begin talking about discipleship and long-term churchmanship, and then once this whole doctrinal situation comes in, and then you find a great diversity among megachurches in terms of those who really want to take that on. And of course, there are those that are very straightforward that, yes, that is a component of becoming a member here. And that kind of is backwards logic for lots of megachurches. So I admire those churches that have succeeded doing that.
Michael Spencer is author of the blog InternetMonk.com. I highly recommend that you check out InternetMonk.com this weekend. Michael, thanks for being our guest, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Todd. You guys do the same.
Well, coming to our anniversary here in just a few days, Tuesday next week, June the 30th, our anniversary open house and celebration event, we have listeners coming from Michigan, Florida, New Jersey, Nebraska, all for our one-year celebration of the Return of Issues, etc., to the air. Don't think of this as a fancy event, because it isn't going to be. Think church picnic with air conditioning. And believe me, we will have air conditioning, and we'll feed you, and it'll all be free, and we simply want you to come and celebrate with us 1 year of Issues, etc., back on the air. You can wear shorts, T-shirt. I think I will, too, because it's supposed to be hot Tuesday, I believe. If you can be here for the open house, please come out and check out our show as we finish the final hour at 4 o'clock on that Tuesday afternoon, June the 30th. And if you can, please do stay with us for some hamburgers, hot dogs around 6 o'clock. Now, you need to RSVP. Craig@issuesetc.org. Craig@issuesetc.org. It's Tuesday, June the 30th, beginning at 4 o'clock. First here at the open house at LPR Studios in Collinsville, Illinois. And then over for some hot dogs and some hamburgers with our listeners. We'll have some videos to play and give away some LPR bundle packages. It'll be a good night. Craig@issuesetc.org. Monday on Issues, Etc., we'll talk to Bishop N.T. Wright about the doctrine of justification. He has proposed some interesting views on St. Paul and his teaching of justification, how a man is declared righteous. We'll see whether they hold up to Scripture with N.T. Wright on Monday on Issues, Etc. A mile wide. They're more than a mile wide. They're miles wide. Megachurches are big. They're not only big numerically, they're big business, and they are big marketers. A mile wide. Unfortunately, not so deep. Maybe not even an inch deep. The real test of a church, regardless of its size, from Christ's perspective, is faithfulness to the clear proclamation of His cross, the forgiveness of sins, His blood shed for sinners. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again Monday, and thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.